your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Our chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a program for you this evening. And we're going to start off with something that we think is very, very important. Interview with Alex of Dr. Tenpenny. Now, she's a graduate of that osteopath, School of Osteopath up in Kirksville, Missouri. And so we're going to start off with that because it's all important. And she's holding a webinar coming up on July 10th. And we're going to have those details there. We're going to follow this by a live recording that we recorded last week. Randall Mock and I went to Houston, and we stood up with the nurses that are protesting against forced vaccine there in Houston. It was the Houston Methodist Hospital that they all worked for, and they were being forced to take the vaccine shot, which they felt like it was detrimental to their health. But anyway, there's a speech they're given live. We have a live recording from Angelina, Dr. Angelina Farella. And she's a local physician there, and she really gives a really overwhelming, wonderful speech. And then we're going to follow that up by Tucker Carlson and his trials and tribulations, which being surveilled. And then we're going to end up with a Canadian school, residential schools, the big scandal up there of all these children, all these mass graves just coming to be exposed. So that's our program tonight. But first, Alex interviews Dr. Tenpenny, and she tells us some amazing things about this vaccine. Here we go now.
Dr. Tenpenny, thanks for spending time with us, and we're really proud of the work you've been doing.
Thank you so much for having me back, Alex, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, we only got about 40 minutes with you. You got the floor. What do people need to know since you were last on? Vindication, I know, is not sweet for you. You tried to stop this.
Yeah, I have been trying to stop it very loudly since the beginning, since March of last year. In fact, as you know, my schedule's been really packed with interviews. I've done well over 450 now since February of last year. And for people who don't know what I do, I mean, I've been doing this for it'll be 21 years in September. I've logged more than 40,000 hours of personal research into problems associated with vaccines, that I've been on broadcasts, podcasts. I've written two books, which are currently not in print for various reasons right now, but I've written a new ebook called The 20 Mechanisms of Injury, How the COVID Shots Can Make You Sick and Possibly Kill You. We're actually doing a training video on this on July the 10th. You can register by going to drtenpenny.com. If it's the first time to our website, there should be a pop-up that greets you to have you register for the webinar. If you've been there before, you will have to click on the events button at the top so that, and it will say like live webinar, because it's actually 20 plus mechanisms, Alex, because I did this webinar in May. And as it turned out, not very good planning on my part. It was on Mother's Day weekend. And so we've had a lot of people who've said, gosh, I missed it. I was out of town. We were busy. We had family over. Can you please do it again? So by popular demand, we're doing it on July the 10th. A lot of people said there was so much information the first time. I want to listen to it a second time.
And you've got a lot of nurses, a lot of doctors, a lot of scientists, but also common people. They're going to hear a medical doctor go through a huge class, so we've got the information we need to be leaders in our communities. This is so important.
Yeah, and it's the 20 mechanisms of injury, and actually I found multiple more that we're going to be talking about. So not only is it a refresher, because I really believe that the key to learning, repetition is the key to learning, so people can hear it again of how they can warn people who are still on the fence, and Alex, more importantly, as people have gone through, I heard earlier today that somewhere around 47% of people in the U.S. have gotten one of these shots. I'm not sure if that's a real number, but let's just go with it and say that it is. As they start to get sick, because they are going to, you need to know what to look for, what to watch for, because if you catch these symptoms early, and we're going to talk about this in the webinar, that there may be some things that you can do to help. But one of the important things is you can file a VAERS report, and you can educate your doctor and say, doctor, not only, yes, my mother, my father, my sister, my best friend, my child is having side effects from these shots. You don't have to run them through a $100 million medical workup, or a $100,000 medical workup. You can just see that this is a side effect of one of these shots. Act accordingly. So you've got bullets for your gun, metaphorically to speak. You can hopefully still keep people from getting the shot, keep them from getting the second shot. If they start to have side effects, you know what to look for. And we're going to talk some new things, some new mechanisms. We're going to talk about the magnetism. We're going to talk about myocarditis. We're going to talk about tissue modification. We're going to talk about multiple other things. I won't let the cat out of the bag, but some serious things that people need to know about, additional ways how these shots are designed to make you sick and even kill you.
And by the way, doctor, I was really trying to give you the floor because you've got a lot to say. But thousands of other medical doctors, they tried to censor and block. Davos Group coming out 2 days ago and saying, we're working with governments to suppress people and you by name, when mainline science, mainline doctors all agree with you. Now, you were one of the first saying this, but now almost every doctor I see, and my personal doctor agrees with you but won't come on air. Rob Dew's personal doctor agrees, won't come on air. An OGBYN I know won't come on air, but says every woman that's taken the vaccine, they knows had a miscarriage that was pregnant. I mean, this is what you're saying is they try to act like on CNN you're out in left field. You're covering mainline science. We had Dr. Angela Farrell on yesterday. And she was saying, I can't say that this isn't sinister. It's on purpose. She said, this is all mainline science they're going against.
It absolutely is. And so all these people who say that we are anti-science, conspiracy theorists, tinfoil hat, anti-vaccine, and so therefore we have nothing to say. You know, Alex, what it comes down to, and you know this better than anybody, is that when they can't beat you on the science, the only thing they have left is mudslinging, name-calling, and character assassination. So for me, it's sort of like... It's happened before. It's been going on for a long time. It reminds me of when I was in the first grade when my mom said to me, you know, Sherry, sticks and stones can break your bones, but names can never hurt you. Don't stop what you're doing just because somebody's trying to call you names and do character assassination, because they can't beat me on the science, and they know it. And you know what? There were a lot of doctors, Alex, a lot of doctors that took our webinar the first time that actually reached out to me, medical doctors, MDs, DOs, naturopaths, who reached out to me after the webinar, and they were like, wow, I had no idea. Thank you so much. The information you gave us was so valuable. So if we can convert them one doctor at a time, that one doctor sees 5,000 patients. So perhaps of those 5,000 patients, we can keep more of them from being injected with this genetic modification technology that will permanently and irreversibly change your genes.
All right, we're going to break in a minute and a half. I'm going to come back for the next 20 minutes. You've got the floor, next 30 minutes, 100%. Give us a prelude of the top points you're going to hit when we come back.
We're going to talk about the magnetism. And it's real. I want to read you a couple of articles and things that I found, because, you showed that little bit of a screenshot of when I testified at the State House down in Columbus to promote our bill. And it looks as though the bill's going to pass. Absolutely. The bill's going to pass so that employers in the state of Ohio cannot mandate people to get a COVID shot to keep their job. So part of my testimony was that. So I'm happy to be drugged through the mill if that's going to keep our people in the state of Ohio and perhaps set a precedent to other states so that employers cannot make you get an experimental, not proven, no long-term study injection in order to keep a job, to feed your family, and keep a roof over your head.
Well, I got to say this. Hollywood stars mean nothing to me. Politicians, you know, I was with Trump yesterday. He's a good guy. I like him overall, but he got lied to about the vaccine. But, you know, I didn't get excited being 20 feet from Trump. But with you, I get so excited because of your leadership, how you've been right, and how you stand against tyranny. We admire Dr. Sherry Tenpenny so much. We're going to come right back to her. We'll give you the website again, and she's going to have the floor when we come back. DrTenpenny.com, DrTenpenny.com. Tell everybody you know, tune in now. Eric Clapton was bullied, one of my favorite musicians, was bullied by his family to take the Pfizer shot. And, of course, you know, it paralyzed him. He almost died. And then he knows other people, his personal friends, that got basically paralyzed. Well, now British rocker dies from brain hemorrhage 2 weeks after AstraZeneca shot. They even had to put an advisory on it. How did Dr. Sherry Tenpenny last year know this would happen? How did other scientists know? Because they read the medical literature. Absolutely insane. So going back to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, osteopathic medical doctor, 21 years, exposing this from her own experiences, now in the middle of this depopulation, whatever you call it, please continue and lay out what we're facing.
Well, it's just really a horrifying thing, Alex. And, you know, it's interesting that we just got some notifications yesterday that they really are giving some people saline shots. I mean, and that's because they don't want everybody to die all at once, is my opinion of that. But every single person that has been injected, even if you say, oh, well, I feel fine. There's nothing wrong with me. I always sadly say, well, I'm glad that you didn't fall into category one of the 20 mechanisms of injuries. Category one is sudden death, which is anaphylactic shock, heart attack, and stroke. And so you didn't have one of those, so that doesn't mean you're scot-free, because you're going to have spike proteins in your body that can do all kinds of detrimental things. You can have antibodies to the spike proteins, which will probably be around forever. The antibodies themselves can attack your lungs, your kidneys, and your livers and cause autoimmune disease. And then there's a whole kind of cluster of other types of things. And that's going to be greatly expanded on our webinar on July the 10th. We're going to talk really in depth about this cardiomyopathy, because this cardiomyopathy that all these teenage kids are getting, all these teenage boys, there was a report in Epoch Times yesterday of the military. There's 23 military recruits that were hospitalized with serious myocarditis. So I want people to really know what that is, so that they do not, under any circumstances, allow their teenagers to be injected with this shot, and particularly their teenage boys. I had a report yesterday, Alex. I had a patient in my office who actually works in a labor and delivery unit in one of the local hospitals. And she said this baby was born, and the mother was furious that the child wasn't going to be injected with a COVID shot. Hours old baby was furious that the baby didn't qualify for that. It's just a travesty of what's happening with our kids.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I mean, you raised the big issue. You've explained this. The medical literature admits it. Some say that the VAERS is maybe 1 out of 10, 1 out of 100. Some studies say it's about 40 times on average. For every person that dies or gets sick that reports to it, there are many, many times that don't. But the way I've seen this described in other studies, maybe you can clarify it, is you'll see, oh, a cluster at one military base, or a cluster at one nursing home, or a cluster at one hospital where they admit, oh, 10 patients died, 20 or 30 got sick from the shot, blood clots. And they go, we don't know why it's a cluster here. Well, that's where there's a good doctor, good nurses that see what happened and reported it. Others cover it up and keep it quiet. We've had nurses and doctors on that have said they were ordered to cover it up. So explain why we hear about clusters. Isn't that really just where it breaks through and actually the truth gets out?
Well, I got this kind of a cluster meme sent to me yesterday, Alex. It's four screenshots. I'm looking at it on my computer right now. Four screenshots from Newsweek magazine on different dates. One was dated April 21st, one's dated April 19th, and one is dated June the 29th. And there's three different headlines, and I'm going to read them to you. Headline number one, group of Canadians accidentally received saline injection instead of COVID-19. Title number two, Walgreens stores injects people with saline rather than with COVID vaccine in a mix-up. Title number three, saline injected instead of COVID vaccine in South Carolina. Is that an accident or is that intentional? And is this leading to what you just said about clusters? Are they sending boxes of vials that are just normal saline to certain places and cluster and boxes of the real thing to other places so that they
Well, let me tell you, I was told by a retired Army colonel who has a son in special operations that they were told, hey, we're just giving you saline, don't worry, and then they didn't get sick. And I've heard from others the exact same thing, that government bureaucrats are just acting like they're getting a shot. They're not even taking it.
Exactly. And I think that that's just criminal because, and I think that part of it is, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, they don't want everybody to be sick and dying all at the same time. We have to have clusters of people who get their shot and everything seems to be okay. We're, and Dr. Peter McCullough said this yesterday in an interview that he did, where he said the next shot, these boosters are going to be the real thing and are really going to be the kill shots. I want to mention just briefly, Alex, you know, when I got taken through the mud, like we talked about earlier, by the mainstream media, and really didn't matter to me, about this whole concept of magnetism and how people are magnetic. And I want to read you three titles of what I'm actually going to be talking about on the July 10th webinar on the 20 mechanisms of injury that you can find by going to drtenpenny.com. If the pop-up doesn't greet you, you can go to the events tab and click on live event, live webinar. Listen to these titles. This is a chapter from a textbook. Tissue engineering using magnetite nanoparticles. And it goes through all the steps on how they do this with polyethylene glycol. They construct 3D tissue-like structures and what actually happens to the tissues with that. There is another textbook that I found. This is a 517-page textbook. It's available as an ebook. That was written on, that was published in 2018, Clinical Applications of Magnetic Nanoparticles. Another book published in 2017, 318-page book, Magnetic Nanoparticles in Medicine. They have known this. They've been working on this for a long time, and they want to suspend it in a lipid coating so they can externally move it to where they want it to be with a magnet. Now, I have to say, just in qualification, like a lot of things that happen in medicine, a lot of things that happen in government, that they start out with good intentions, and then the good intentions turn rather nefarious. The good intention would be if you could put a particle inside of a lipid coating, a magnetic particle, and you could put chemotherapy in there, and you could use an external magnet to move it directly to the cancer so that it could be released at the level of the cancer, wouldn't that be a better thing than injecting people with chemotherapy so that every cell in their body gets dosed and they get terribly sick?
But instead, what reading is these graphite chemicals they found is designed to go across the blood-brain barrier. Why would you want this vaccine to go across the blood-brain barrier?
You don't. I was just making a point that when they first started researching this back in the 70s, I think that there was some people who thought, well, wouldn't it just be cool if we could direct these different places? And then DARPA gets involved. And as you know, anything that has DARPA associated with it is just nefarious. And so now the graphene can go across the blood-brain barrier. The spike protein can poke holes in the blood-brain barrier. And you can take that spike protein into the brain. It can modify something called the FUS gene. When the FUS gene gets modified, it leads to ALS or cancer.
Wow.
It will modify the DTP, another type of protein that causes frontal temporal lobe degeneration. And that degeneration causes people to lose their ability to speak, lose their ability to read, have facial recognition, or to form words.
And we hear about people being in a fog, just like the autistic kids, but they have a name for frontal lobe. That's called a lobotomy.
Well, frontal lobe is the area right behind
I know, but I'm saying what you just described sounds like a lobotomy.
Well, maybe. I mean, it's not a physical lobotomy, but it certainly could be a chemical one. I mean, and it's interesting to me that people, if this spike protein can punch holes in the blood-brain barrier, and we've got magnetite, graphene, other types of things that can get into the brain, And we know that you can disrupt that FTP43 protein, and that causes frontal temporal lobe degeneration, and people can put keys on their forehead and make
them
sick.
Stay there, stay there. Final segment, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Stay with us. I can't wait to hear this information. This is incredible. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and we had to go to that break because the satellites, you know, fire at certain times. You were at a cliffhanger about if this is attacking the frontal lobe, if it's attacking the, you're about to get to that big event, and then largest teacher union to debate demanding vaccinations before returning to in person, demanding all students be injected. What a suicide cult. What a Russian roulette situation. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, final segment, please, please lay it all out for folks.
Somebody needs to put the NEA on notice that if they actually really follow through with that, that they're going to be sued for a whole litany of things. Lying about a shot, lying about, that these kids are vulnerable, that they're spreading anything, put them on a Nuremberg trial for crimes against humanity. Somebody needs to sue them up front before they get any farther with this. Because if that happens, then they will have to go through the discovery process and prove that they're safe. And that there are studies that have been done and that they're safe for 15 to 17 year olds, that they should be given to all kids. I mean, Indiana came out with a thing a couple of weeks ago that said, if your kids are vaccinated in grade age groups K through 7, they haven't even gotten to that point yet, but if they've been injected, kindergartners through the 7th grade, then those injected children who are now marked forever and forever will have their genetics modified and most likely will not turn into adult women or adult men. They will be kind of neutered and be a eunuch as they grow up and will not actually evolve into mature adults. If we've injected them, if parents have been stupid enough to inject their children with these technologies, then that will give them privileges. They won't have to wear a mask. They can sit with their friends in the lunchroom. They can play a musical instrument. They can play with their friends on recess. They can go and play in sports. And if they have not been injected, they won't be able to do any of those things. So now we're separating these kids and making them feel terrible, going home and begging their parents, crying, begging, pleading, mommy, mommy, please.
This sounds like the plot of a nightmare science fiction horror movie, but it's really happening.
It's really happening. I say that every day, Alex. I feel like I really am literally living in the Matrix.
Please continue.
Well, we're seeing that this is, Dr. Larry Pilevsky, there's a group of us, Alex, that we've come to refer to ourselves as the 5 Ds, the 5 doctors, because we've done a lot of webinars together. We support each other. We are colleagues, friends, and we share a lot of information. And the 5 Ds is me, Dr. Larry Pilevsky, Dr. Christian Northrup, Dr. Lee Merritt, and Dr. Carrie Made. And
these are good doctors fighting Klaus Schwab and the Great Reset.
Absolutely. And so we refer to ourselves as the 5 Ds. And Larry is a board-certified pediatrician. And Larry has said many, from the beginning, this is not a normal shot, it's a bioweapon. Dr. Lee Merritt, who's an orthopedic surgeon, says, and in the military, and was, and did a full career in the military, said this is a bioweapon. Dr. Christian Northrup, who's an OB-GYN, has seen all the bleeding problems, saying this is a bioterrorism weapon. And it was Dr. Carrie Made, who was the one who first started talking really loudly in the physician community about the hydrogel in the vaccines, or in the shots. And Dr. Larry has said multiple times, if parents get their kids these shots, they can absolutely, they're just signing away their rights to ever wanting to become a grandparent. And if they give these kids, these 12 to 15 year old kids, these shots, if they give it to a 12 year old girl who's already started her periods, is anybody going to keep track to see whether or not she stops them? If she hasn't started her periods yet, is anybody going to look to see if she ever does? What about the little boys? What about the little boys that will never grow into men, will never go through puberty? They won't develop body hair and facial hair and lower their voice and get muscles and grow tall. Is anybody going to monitor to see if that happens? If we give this to 12-year-old boys, what happens if we don't get females that grow into women and men that and boys that don't grow into men and they can't reproduce? Well, the nefarious people at the top are spending a whole lot of time killing a lot of people off from the top. They certainly don't want to have their children, have all of these children repopulate the planet from the bottom.
And they say everywhere, get rid of the humans. We need to sterilize everybody. So they're admitting why they're doing it openly while they do it. It's just madness that people are signing their children on for this.
It is just, it is absolutely madness. I mean, I see some of these reports, there was a report, I think it was the other day on AOL News. They were celebrating the fact that this little 3-year-old girl had been enrolled in the most recent clinical study. I mean, I think these parents who enroll their kids in these studies and they want their these pregnant women who allow themselves to get the shot, and the babies that they allow to put into these roles, and all of the children and the teenagers and all of these people, these parents, I hope eventually all of them will be charged with crimes against humanity and perhaps child abuse.
They are testing out depopulation. They're testing the censorship. They're testing the control. But I think they miscalculated. So many medical doctors are coming out. So many people are communicating. I see fear in Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates' face. Bill Gates' wife has left him. Suddenly Bill Gates has been pulled off TV. Not all is well inside the New World Order.
Well, I certainly hope that's true. You know, I'm sure that you saw that graphic that came out about us. This was a while ago now. But as if by the Center for Digital Hate, you know, which is such an oxymoron name.
Oh, they say it's terrorism in Biden's new report to question lockdowns or vaccines. That's white supremacism.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And they named us all as the disinformation dozen, right? So it was me and Del Bigtree and Bobby Kennedy and Christian Northrup, Aaron Elizabeth, Joe Mercola, a whole bunch of us. There were 12 people, you know, Sayer G, Kelly Brogan. I mean, it's just a whole bunch of us that they called us. We were the disinformation dozen. And we've added, and we thought, well, wow, they missed a couple of people. You know, but they blame us for the fact that we are putting out all this information and Biden isn't going to reach his 70% of the American population by July 4th. I mean, after all,
that was my last question. I don't believe it's even 47%, but they admit it's a giant failure for them. Now they want new lockdowns to make us take it. It's not working. If people know it's depopulation and we don't just accept it, it's game over. I see this as a disaster for the globalists. It's going to be terrible. People are going to be maimed and die, but they're going to know the truth now.
It is sad, and it is true. I mean, you know, you probably saw this came out a while back now, the SAGE report. I mean, SAGE is a modeling agency out of the UK, and the SAGE report said that, you know, in paragraph 32 and paragraph 55 says it quite clearly that when the third wave comes, which it will, that 60 to 65 to 70% of people that have had two of the shots will be sick, hospitalized, or die. 65
For folks that don't understand that, why does somebody who's already had it take the shot, get really sick, or you've already had the vaccines, now that makes you run into anything similar, any type of virus, you have big problems? What's happening?
It's a process called antibody-dependent enhancement, that you develop this antibody. It's a non-binding antibody. And when you get re-exposed to coronaviruses, that it actually drags the coronavirus into your white blood cells, and it makes you sicker than you would have ever been if you had never had the shot. And it causes massive cytokine storm, massive type, it looks like septic shock, and organ system failure. I mean, we had there's been several, but it had an autopsy report of a man, an elderly gentleman who was in perfect health on no medications, got the shot in order to go into the hospital and have an elective procedure. He got exposed in the hospital after he'd had the shot to sick people who had COVID, and he, within several days, massively died. And they did an autopsy on him because they couldn't understand why, and found abscesses in his lungs, found blood clots, found all kinds of horrific things that had happened to him. And so the antibody-dependent enhancement is real. It's the reason, Alex, why at all these years that they've been trying to develop a coronavirus vaccine by injecting coronaviruses like you would with a flu shot, why they could never move it out of animal studies was because the animals got re-exposed, got very sick and or died.
Sure. Well, in closing, you got to come back soon. I know why are so many people getting herpes or shingles after they take the shot?
I'm not sure what the exact mechanism of that is, but I'm sure there is something that's releasing these viruses. I haven't taken the time to dig into that yet. We know that we're actually getting those reports. It's not clear to me yet why.
All right. Dr. Ten Penny, TenPenny.com. Everybody sign up for the webinar. Get it out. And all you that are along with big tech and censorship, remember, you're fools. You're not part of the establishment. You're pretending you are. All of us are under attack, left, right, gay, straight, old, young. Everybody better come together and expose this. This is Bill Gates' depopulation. DrTimPenny.com. Dr. Tim Penny, we love you. We appreciate you. Please come back sooner, okay?
Well, actually make an effort to do that, Alex. Thank you so much for having me on, and I hope that many of your people will come and join us at the webinar on July the 10th.
Absolutely. God bless you. Thank you. Stay with us. Next hour coming up.
Next up is Dr. Angelina Ferrella, and she spoke before a protest crowd in Houston. And it was a week ago today in front of the Houston Methodist Hospital Center in downtown Houston there on Fannin Street. And she spoke just a wonderful speech, a stand-up lady. She believes in this country. Her mother was in a work camp right after World War II and finally immigrated to this country, and she's made something out of herself. And this doctor is really a stand-up doctor. I think she's a member of the American Frontline Doctors. She had on one of those coats. And so here's Dr. Angelina Ferrella, a really stand-up lady. Here we go now.
Thank you, and God bless you all for coming out here to protect our kids, first and foremost. Okay, I am a pediatrician. I have been a pediatrician for 25 years. I have been an advocate for children for 25 years. I trained at University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, Texas. I am not a native Texan, but I can tell you, I got here as quick as I could. I refuse to allow patients to leave my office without some form of treatment. I don't you. Because I've been treating patients that were masked and still got COVID. Why are we vaccinating for a disease they can still get? And let me tell you something. I don't put on sunscreen so that you don't get skin cancer. I do not vaccinate myself to protect you. I vaccinate myself to protect me. Hail to the no. Because it is not a vaccine. And it's almost embarrassing that there are medical care workers that will not look at data. Look at the data. Children do not get this disease in severity. I'm still looking for those numbers. The ACIP,
the Advisory Council on Immunization Practices of the Government. Did anyone watch that sickening show the other day? Oh my gosh. They say, where's the myocarditis sign? I know I saw it. There you go. Okay. Myocarditis is not mild in children. Let me repeat that. Myocarditis, which is swelling of the heart, is not mild ever. Child, and no child should ever get something like that from a vaccine. Ever! Here is a fact. In 1999, when I was training, I had to go to the refrigerators and pull rotavirus vaccine out of the refrigerators because it was recalled for 15 cases of intussusception. Passionate thing for me. I'm a little passionate.
because we have God's light shining down on us. I know. We are protected. And I'm asking for all your prayers for everyone here. If you still don't have a job, if they destroyed your livelihood, I know in my heart of hearts that God has a better path for you, that's bigger, better, awesome, terrific, fantastic. Blow your mind. So don't fear. Fear not. This entire garbage was based on fear, and this is just an extension of it. No more fear. No more fear. We are not fearful in the United States of America. We are brave. We are courageous. We are Americans. She was from Belarus, Russia, USSR, via the German concentration camp, the work camp, as a child. She was liberated by the American soldiers, our brave guys. She told me stories of how our soldiers would give them Hershey's bars, you know, Hershey's chocolate bars, and it was a foreign concept to them. They had no idea. Of course, they were starving to death, so what did a chocolate bar matter? And she had to stay in that camp. I want to educate you guys now just a little bit, okay? Because the war didn't end in 45. The war did not end in 1945. My mother lived in that camp until 1951. There was no place to put these people. And when she came to the United States of America, she was a displaced person. She was a woman without a country. She was a kid with a hope and a dream, and her family came with her. They were just praising God that they got to see the shores of the United States of America. They got to see Lady Liberty when they pulled in. Bring us our poor. We take you all in. We don't care. 1951 is when she came here. She actually did not become a U.S. citizen until the 70s. Because she couldn't. Because she was a displaced person. So I want you all to understand, if you were born in this country, how lucky and fortunate and amazing and strong and courageous. Why are we here? Because we have a constitution. And why are we here to defend it? Because we have a constitution. We have some really smart people, like Richard Urso. All of our founding fathers. I mean, we are here, we are en masse, and we are going to take over the narrative, which is fear. Fear not. Be brave. Pursuit of happiness. 100% of the time, and in 100% of your day.
Yes.
God bless you.
What a wonderful speech that Dr. Angelina Ferrella gave there in front of that hospital. Next, we have Tucker Carlson defending his statement last week that he was under surveillance, and he thinks there ought to be an investigation of this. But here we go next with Tucker Carlson on the NSA's surveillance scandal.
A couple of days ago, we told you that the National Security Agency had read our emails and was effectively threatening us with them, leaking them. It's not a statement you would make lightly. No one wants to go on TV and say, the government's spying on me, you sound like a lunatic, except when it's true, and in this case it is true. And of course, it's not just this show. We're spying on a lot of people, and they should stop, because it's illegal. Yesterday, we had a long conversation with officials at the National Security Agency. We got a statement out of them, and they effectively conceded, yes, they read our emails. They have some justification for it, but it's not justified. It never is, except in cases when national security is threatened, and nothing that we did would ever threaten national security, period. Liberals used to understand that. They were very worried about this program. Back in 2006, Joe Biden himself said he was worried about the NSA spying on American citizens.
I don't have to listen to your phone calls and know what you're doing. If I know every single phone call you made, I'm able to determine every single person you talk to. I can get a pattern about your life that is very, very intrusive. And the real question here is, what do they do with this information that they collect that does not have anything to do with Al-Qaeda? And we're going to trust the president and the vice president of the United States that they're doing the right thing. Don't count me in on that.
So now Joe Biden is in charge of the national security apparatus, and his administration has turned it on Americans who he has redefined as combatants, domestic terrorists, white supremacists. Where does this go from here? We think we know, and we're deeply concerned about it. We know the NSA is collecting data from American citizens, spying on them. They have a heart attack if you call it spying. That's exactly what it is. Let's stop using BS language. It's spying. In a House Judiciary Committee meeting today, a senior Microsoft executive said that most Americans would be stunned if they knew how often the federal government used secret orders to collect information on them.
While the recent news about secret investigations is shocking, most shocking is just how routine secrecy orders have become when law enforcement targets an American's email, text messages, or other sensitive data stored in the cloud. Throughout the Obama, Trump, and Biden administrations, up to a third of all legal demands we receive from federal law enforcement include secrecy orders, up to 3,500 in just 1 year. And these are just the demands on Microsoft. Add the demands likely served on Facebook, Apple, Google, Twitter, and others, and you get a frightening sense of the mountain of secrecy orders used by federal law enforcement in recent years.
So what we need is an investigation into what exactly is going on. We have the largest bureaucracy in the history of mankind. There's never been a human organization larger than the American federal government. And so we need to know what the important parts of it, the parts with a lot of power, are doing in our name. We need an investigation. And today at that hearing, at least one Republican member of Congress, Matt Gaetz of Florida, called for that.
The most watched cable news host has been stating for the last several nights that the NSA has been monitoring his communications. And amazingly, the NSA has issued a statement that is so couched, it is functionally an admission. And it's not like the NSA's never lied to us. I mean, we were told that there was no bulk collection of Americans' data. Turns out there was bulk collection of Americans' data. We cannot count on these people to police themselves. Join me in calling for an Inspector General investigation into any monitoring that the NSA or any other element of the intelligence community has engaged in relative to Tucker Carlson. Because these denials, these couch denials, raise more questions than they provide answers.
They gather the information and they threaten you with it. Information is power. The more they have, the more power they have over you. And if they don't like your politics, it's a problem. So we do need an investigation. And tonight, the House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy of California, has called for that, an investigation by the House Intelligence Committee. We'll see what happens. Glenn Greenwald, meanwhile, is one of the people who is responsible for what we know about what the NSA does. He broke the original story of the NSA's mass surveillance under the Obama administration. He writes now for Substack. We highly recommend it. He joins us tonight. Glenn, thanks so much for coming on. So your position on this has remained consistent for more than a decade. American citizens, unless they pose some obvious national security threat, imminent national security threat, shouldn't be targeted by their own government for spying. Why is that not the position of everyone in journalism?
That's a really good question. You know, it's interesting when I did the reporting with Edward Snowden in 2013 and 2014, liberals loved that reporting so much that they gave us every award that they have to offer, the Pulitzer, the Polk, the film that was done about my work with Edward Snowden was given an Oscar. I went up on the Oscar stage. They couldn't lavish enough prizes and praise on us. And now here we are after the Trump years, and we know that the Democratic Party and journalism in general has aligned with the CIA, the NSA, and the FBI, and has aligned and merged with the security state. And so in response to the report that you did, you would think other journalists, just out of self-interest, even if they dislike your ideology and you, would say, we want to know whether the NSA NSA is abusing their powers in order to spy on journalists they dislike. And instead they mocked it. They said that, oh, he has to be paranoid in order to think this. And they took the NSA statement that I have seen over and over, Tucker, over the last 8 years, that is designed to mislead the public. They used their carefully constructed words to say Tucker Carlson is not an intelligence target of the NSA, which may be true. But what that leaves out is that there are so many other ways that they have to spy on the communications of American citizens without making you a target, without getting a warrant. They have huge authorities that really haven't been reined in since 2013 and 2014. I'm glad to hear Kevin McCarthy, other GOP leaders calling for an investigation. But the reality is that in bipartisan Washington, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer have been joining with the likes of Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell to expand the NSA, to kill any attempts to reform it. So these are kind of empty words.
I totally agree with that. Mitch McConnell's 100% on board with what they do. I got a number of calls and texts, say one from Politico, asking me, well, who are you emailing? I mean, I think clearly you would never claim your emails are being read by the government unless you could prove it. Again, you sound like a crazy person. We can prove it. It happened. But now the line is, well, you must have been emailing the wrong people. I was under the impression as a journalist and an American citizen, I have the right to email anybody I want. Is that not the standard any longer?
Tucker, ponder the authoritarianism needed for them to say that. Think about the premise there. They're saying that if you talk to somebody that the NSA has decided should be spied upon, it means that that person, even though they've been charged with no crime and convicted of nothing, is up to no good. They're like a terrorist or a threat, and you yourself are also. The whole point of the reporting that we did is that the NSA spies on millions and millions of people indiscriminately. If you're a journalist, it's almost impossible not to talk to a target of the NSA. They target everybody constantly all the time. That's why they're this huge sprawling agency. But the authoritarianism that is pervading journalism says if you're talking to somebody the NSA doesn't like, you're a bad person.
We're not going to put up with it at all. Once they have the information, then they threaten and control you. And that's what they were trying to do to us. Glenn Greenwald, I appreciate it. And your reporting, which we have new appreciation for. Thank you.
We're going to end up and play as much as we can right down to the end of the program of this Canadian residential school scandal of all these bodies in these mass graves of these children. But here we go with that.
A Canadian Indigenous group says it found the unmarked graves of more than 700 people at a Catholic residential school in Saskatchewan this week. Many of the remains are believed to be those of children. Canada's residential schools dated back to the early 19th century, starting in 1831 when the government stole nearly 150,000 Indigenous children from their families and housed them in the schools. The country continued housing Indigenous children until 1996. Survivors have said that they experienced sexual, physical, and psychological abuse during their time at these schools. Joining us to talk more about this is author David Troyer. He's a member of the Leech Lake Ojibwe tribe, and he wrote the book, The Heartbeat of Wounded Knee, Native America from 1890 to the Present. David, thank you for being here. This is a difficult subject, obviously, but I'm hoping you can tell us more about how these discoveries are shedding light on the treatment of Indigenous people across North America.
Sure, yeah. Thanks for having me here to talk about an issue which is incredibly painful and very difficult for a lot of people who don't know the history to properly understand.
And as an Indigenous person, how have you reacted to news of these mass graves and to the attention that it's garnered, as you say, as other people are starting to become aware of this dark history?
I mean, it's as a father, as a Native person, the fact that across Canada they're finding the graves of Native children who were forcibly removed from their homes oftentimes or coerced out of them and raised essentially by religious orders and by the state and deprived of their community and their family, they met with early death. And it's very painful to consider. You know, in my family, you know, the legacy of boarding schools is alive. My grandmother, who is still alive, was sent to Tomah Indian Boarding School in Tomah, Wisconsin. She was taken from her mother when she was about 6 years old and not allowed to return until she was 10 or 12. And so, like, you know, outsiders may admit that, you know, there were wrongs of the past, but they persist in thinking that these things are only relevant in the past. But the effects of boarding schools are with us today. The fact that my grandmother wasn't mothered by her own mother affected how she raised my mom, which in turn affected how my mom raised me. There are longstanding sort of pernicious effects of these schools, both in Canada and the United States.
Well, David, you know, I think you're making a really compelling point about the legacy of this wanton disregard, this abuse, this attempt to erase a cultural legacy. And I imagine that there are people who are hearing us talk about this who are amazed not only that, you know, when they see those black and white images and they hear about this, it does feel like something in the past, but that this stretched until 1996, and still neither the Catholic Church nor the Canadian government in this specific case is accepting responsibility for what happened to these children. How does that make you feel, and what kind of message do you think that sends?
Well, it sends the same old message that these governments have been sending Indigenous people for the last few hundred years, which is that, you know, we are an impediment to the quote-unquote progress of so-called civilized nations. How does it make me feel? You know, my feelings are kind of secondary. I would like to see both formal apologies and processes in both Canada and the United States, not only to address the wrongs of the past, but to help Indigenous people in the present and the future. Because the fact is, I mean, these boarding schools were set up not because there was necessarily any antipathy, racial or cultural antipathy toward Native people. These were part of a colonial process. These schools were set up to destroy Native nations by destroying Native families, in the same manner that sort of our land was taken from us as a way to destroy tribes, not out of hatred, but out of a desire to take our resources and our land. And so, you know, it's really important, though, for people to think about sort of the ways in which education was something that was done to Native people. It wasn't something that was done for us for our benefit. And so there's could be learned from addressing these things in the past, from formal apologies from the church and from respective governments. And there are policies that should be put in place to not just address the wrongs of the past, but to empower and protect Native people moving.
David, I understand and appreciate you saying that your personal feelings are, in fact, secondary to this. But I think it is helpful for people who haven't had much exposure to these issues to have you as our touchstone as we're trying to learn more about the depths of this problem, both historic and as it exists now. And so, to that end, I appreciate you talking to us about this, and I'm wondering what you think needs to happen to make amends with Indigenous communities. You offered some thoughts about apologies, and the Canadian government has spent more than $3 billion on reparations for survivors of these types of residential homes. Do you feel like that's enough, or what more do you think needs to be done?
Oh, that's not nearly enough. Reparations, you know, and the Truth and Reconciliation process in Canada was a good start. You know, it spoke to the needs of survivors of the residential boarding school system, but it didn't speak to the needs of Indigenous populations in general. It doesn't fix the problem, which is that we lack access to education. We lack access to capital and credit and as largely disenfranchised people, they're actual today. So beyond reconciliation, beyond apologies, beyond reparations, I think all school, including all private boarding schools, like the very fancy ones in the States, like Andover and Choate and Deerfield Academy, as well as all public universities and private universities, should be completely free for Native people to attend. That would be a structural change that would address the wrongs of the past, and it would protect us moving into the future. That's one thing that could happen.